Emotions have risen to be an increasingly difficult subject to talk about in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. Protesters shutting down massive vaccination clinics in Los Angeles sit in stark opposition to doctors, scientists, and many Americans who are begging for vaccination to build herd immunity, which leaves little room for conversation. But today, that is what we want to do. We want to learn about how to talk about vaccines, specifically on college campuses. Our names are Shivesh,
Angelica,
Neha,
Sally,
and Yoshi.
And we could not be more excited to be joined by two experts today, Dr. Rabbi Jiha, who will speak to the science and policy behind vaccination, as well as Dr. Calvin Chow, who will broach the topic of how to speak about vaccination. We hope over this next 20 minutes to give you information on both the importance of vaccination, as well as how to de-escalate what is increasingly becoming a difficult topic.
We have introduced our podcast discussion points. For our first segment, we're going to talk to Dr. Chow to learn effective strategies for discussing vaccination in a respectful manner before getting into the science behind vaccines. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Chow. Dr. Chow is a MD-PhD who specializes in healthcare communication at UCSF and is also a medical professor. So we feel really lucky to have him here today. Dr. Chow, do you want to talk a little bit about the work you do?
Thanks very much, Yoshi and Sally. I've spent about 20 plus years learning deeply about maximizing communication between patients and providers. So as we've done more and more of this work, we've realized that this is not just about how doctors communicate with patients, it's about how people communicate with people.
That is so great, and especially relevant for what we're looking to talk to about today at a time where it feels increasingly impossible to bridge gaps between opposing viewpoints. So just as a quick jumping off point before we get into talking about vaccination in college, I want to flash back to a non-COVID-19 world in the spring of 2019 at UCLA in what feels like small, but at the time felt big, small measles epidemic. I was in a general chemistry lecture where the vast majority of students were aiming to go into healthcare or biological research of some kind. Employees from the Student ASH Center interrupted the class and announced the name of a student in front of the entire lecture hall, stating that they did not want to single him out, but because he had not answered any of the multiple emails or phone calls that they had reached out to him with, they needed to speak to him about his vaccination status and a possible measles exposure. The professor stated over the microphone as the boy walked out of the 400-person lecture hall that anti-vaxxers were anti-science and they had no place in his classroom, and that he certainly would not be welcome back until he had received his vaccine and changed his mind about vaccination. The class responded largely by chanting "vaccinate, vaccinate" repetitively, likely due to an on-campus fear of measles and anger surrounding the outbreak. As the student left looking angry and upset, he certainly did not look like someone who had had his mind changed or would receive one of the free MMR vaccines that UCLA was offering in the wake of the measles epidemic. If communication is through shaming or degrading the viewpoint of others, then they're unlikely to change their minds. I think that this story is illustrative of both the power that colleges have to start herd immunity by offering free vaccines, but also how the communication surrounding vaccines is often lagging behind opportunities to actually get vaccinated. I think the story is also largely illustrative of how conversations about vaccines go on essentially on every platform of communication possible, from social media to protests to communication among friends. It feels like vaccines are in the same arena as other hot button topics, such as gun control, that don't allow for meaningful discussion, where the loudest voices of pro-vaxxers and anti-vaxxers are often the dominant ones on the news. So as a healthcare communications expert, how can we learn to talk about vaccines with a constructive dialogue when it seems that there are two sides that fundamentally disagree?
This is such an important question in these days of COVID. I would say that put ourselves in the shoes of your classmate and imagine that for whatever reason, let's say that you're disorganized, you're scared of needles, your family brought you up not to want vaccines. In many, many different possibilities, we don't know what those were. Let's put ourselves in the shoes of that person and imagine having people come into the classroom and say, "We don't want to call you out," but then calling you out, and then being obviously shamed by the entire class. How would you feel? And would that make us want to get vaccinated? If anything, it would make us not want to get vaccinated. So effective communication is putting yourself in the shoes of the other person. And if you don't know exactly what they may be feeling, asking them, or a couple of steps before that, the folks from ASH, you know, just like waiting from outside the class and just taking them aside privately, how do we support everybody's desire to be respected?
That makes a lot of sense. And so then when thinking about your own personal practice as well, where do you think communication with vaccination has largely fallen down?
Actually, I think that probably most people are somewhere in the middle. They're bargaining about this all, given the fact that there are so many factors. The second aspect here, I think, is about folks who are pro-vaccine to say, you know, all we have to do is get vaccines in arms. The issue there is that that arm is attached to a person, and that person has misgivings and worries and wonderings, and then we get back to the prior conversation. So, and then we get back to that original thing about respect. Let's say that I really want to do something and then you force me to do it, then I'm gonna want to do it less. Right? So how can we really support and respect that person, number one? And number two, and maybe most importantly here, how do we, you can trust me because you see that I don't have an agenda to make you get a vaccine. You see that my agenda, so to speak, is to listen to you and to get a sense of, you know, why yes, why no, and to be flexible about the outcome. But of course, as a doctor, I want everybody to get vaccinated. I know that's not going to be possible. And I also have seen, like in my own practice, patients who are traditionally in demographics where they would not want to get the vaccine. And during the pandemic, we've talked about their relative adherence or lack of adherence to the public health recommendations. And some of those patients come to me, they'll say, should I get the vaccine? And and rather than say yes, I'll say, tell me what your thoughts are. And like, I don't know, you know, I've been with you a long time, Dr. Chow, I trust you. Then for me to say, I would advise that you get it. It's something that I would hate for you to have. Then they'll say, okay, done. Yeah, I think it's just fundamentally about trust, establishing trust.
Yeah, I think there are very effective strategies for building trust for people and between the medical communities. So as we mentioned about social media earlier, I believe we are living in a time which conspiracy theories dominate on the internet through social media. And it seems very difficult for people to break out of the cycle of misinformation. So how can we correct people's misconception about vaccination without coming across or overbearing them?
That's such a great question, Sally. I think one of the forces that's happening more and more on social media is that you get into your bubble of things that you want to, things that you want to believe, and then you seek out support your own perspective, and then that cements that story for yourself. And unfortunately, I don't see a really easy solution to it, because what it would require would be taking everybody, including myself, out of our comfort zone, right? But that's the only way that we as people can coexist, I think, is to be able to open to other people's perspectives and to disagree with them when they don't jive, but also to hear deeply what the other person's perspective is. Because, you know, I know this is true for me. Somebody says, you know, I'm not going to take the vaccine. Immediately, I'm like, well, you have to. I have to take the step back and say, tell me all about it. I want to hear all of them. And then, rather than listening to refute, listen to understand. I think those are two of the most fundamental communication skills, and they are the hardest. Because when we've got this thing in our mind saying, well, I got to do this, we're not really listening. We're just waiting to argue.
A follow-up question to that is thinking kind of both, how do you essentially balance not dismissing people's fears about vaccines, but also correcting people's misconceptions about vaccines causing autism or things that have essentially been blatantly disproved, and not coming across as self-righteous or like you have an agenda?
You know, as a doctor, I am constantly being confronted by people whose perspectives are different from my own. So you've told me that you're worried about the vaccine causing autism because you've seen these studies that convinces you. I too would be very afraid of vaccines if I were presented with those data. I wouldn't say, well, you're wrong. I would say my read of those studies is the methods of those studies, that they were flawed in these ways, and therefore the results of the studies don't hold.
I really, really appreciate that perspective. And then as kind of in the same vein as well, there's a lot of people who have a fear of vaccines because they've experienced medical racism or they have a distrust of the scientific community. Could you shed some light on effective strategies for building trust with people?
I'll say that if it were really easy to do, we would all be doing it. So it's not, I can't give you a formula or, you know, okay, just, you know, dissolve this in water and everybody's going to be fine. I can say that it involves a lot of work, knowing that it's going to take time for trust to develop. It's not going to happen overnight. Everybody has their own threshold. And I think the things that are involved in trust are curiosity, respect, empathy, and follow through. Those are the four of the critical elements.
Yeah, so I see the most important part for building trust between people, especially who has experienced medical racism or has misunderstanding of vaccines, is to let them feel that we are respecting them and we must show our empathy for what they experienced. I think these are like very good points. So Dr. Cho, what advice will you give for college students who are making their own healthcare decision for the first time?
So you see, I think this is an important thing to say, is that I'm not going in saying, what do you want to do? Tell me what you want to do. We'll just do it. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we have a standard. Mm-hmm. I would love to know your thoughts in reaction to that standard. Tell me all about what your thoughts are, pro and con. And then let's come to a decision together, particularly people in college who, you know, you're independent thinkers, and whether that is one-on-one or in small groups, those are the kinds of discussions that I think are critical in this day and age.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point. And I think that also gets back to what you talked about in the very beginning with, instead of asking people to tell you a little bit about their opinion, ask them to tell you all of their opinion, a lot of their opinion, and actually take a genuine interest instead of going in with clearly your own agenda and your objective that you're trying to push on other people. So I think that that's a really good way to come full circle and touch on everything that we talked about throughout the interview. Well, thank you so much. We are so, so, so grateful.
Now that we've learned how to communicate about vaccines and address vaccine hesitancy, we will be discussing the science of vaccination and herd immunity with Dr. Jiha.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us today. Could you give us a quick introduction before we dive into the conversation about some of the work that you do?
Absolutely. My name is Dr. Robbie Jiha, and I'm a physician who works at the San Francisco VA in the emergency department and on the teaching wards. I'm a clinical reasoning junkie, which means that I love diagnostic reasoning, but more and more so interested in education. And that's a big part of why I'm here today.
Thank you so much for introducing yourself, Dr. Jiha. Just to get started with a few questions, how would you describe vaccines to people who do not have a science background, or I guess in other words, vaccine 101 for the layperson?
I think that's a fantastic question. At the end of the day, we take a small part of a usually virus, but sometimes bacteria or other infectious organism. A small part of it that is so necessary for that infection to actually work, but isn't good enough to cause an infection by itself. So the real work is in studying an infection, finding something so important for it to work, but also something that isn't enough to cause an infection itself. And we study that, refine that, and then administer it to people and give them in a response such that when they are exposed to the infection, they can recognize this crucial part and counter it, usually with antibodies. So the key is finding something crucial to an infectious organism, but insufficient to actually cause an infection. That's the root of it all.
That sounds really great. Thank you for sharing that. So just kind of building off of on what you said about vaccines, what resources would you recommend to people who want to learn about vaccines but do not want to dive deep into scientific articles?
I think that's a fantastic question. I think we have a plethora of resources at our fingertips, and what I use to guide my patients is the CDC website. So you go to, essentially, I Google CDC vaccines, and the cool thing about the CDC is it has layers of information. So it really, you can tailor it to how much you want to learn, but a great place to start is to Google CDC vaccine. And you'll start with basic, and if you want to learn more and more, that information flows readily from that website.
Thank you, that sounds super helpful. And so just like another key point, what are the big key points for herd immunity and vaccination when thinking about vaccination?
Great question. So the key concept with herd immunity is the recognition that we infect each other. So if I have an infection, I am much more likely to spread it to more people. The concept of herd immunity is that if enough people are vaccinated, then the virus or the bacteria cannot take hold in the population, meaning you don't have to vaccinate everyone to get the disease down to zero. If you vaccinate enough people, the chances of the virus spreading or the bacteria spreading is very low. Now, how can you understand this? I want you to close your eyes and picture a series of matches next to each other. Now, if I knock one match, it'll create a cascade and knock all of them together. And that's how a virus or infection spreads. Herd immunity means that if I just vaccinate and take out three or four matches between this line of matches, if I knock one down, maybe two or three will knock over, but it will not spread to the entire population. That's the key concept of herd immunity, is if you vaccinate enough people, you remove enough matches from the series such that the fire doesn't spread from left to right.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Our next question is, what can you say to the success of vaccines and how have they changed the face of disease globally?
Vaccines are the single most effective scientific health-related intervention known to womankind. And I say womankind deliberately. That's it. It's plain and simple. It has changed the landscape. We don't hear about polio much. We don't hear about smallpox at all. The rate of decline in COVID-related cases globally as a result of vaccination was very well documented in Israel and is proving that even for coronavirus, what we have known about vaccine is also true. We also know, unfortunately, the other side of this. We know that when vaccination rates plummet, so does disease returns. In some parts of the world, measles vaccinations have plummeted, and as a result, we've seen a recurrence of measles. So we know two things about vaccines. They're the single most effective scientific discovery with regard to health, period. Their presence reduces disease and in some cases eliminates it, and their absence results in a recurrence of disease. All that has been scientifically proven.
So kind of building about what you spoke about vaccine efficacy globally and its link to disease prevalence or mitigation, how do you get people to establish lifelong vaccination habits?
You know, I think at the end of the day, the key word there is trust, because we know scientifically that this works. So the question is why would there not be uptake in that? And that is trust in the scientific community. As you can imagine, this is a broad, touchy subject, but we can do our part. There have been many reasons why patients mistrust the scientific and medical community. We have done things that we regret, things like the opiate epidemic, and the list is long. So I think it has to be a conversation that's centered around trust. So if you have a patient before you who does not trust the scientific system, you have to get to the root of that and understand that and unravel that for them. And of course, that a similar conversation can be held at the public level, but you first have to recognize that the real issue is trust. And that trust, that deficiency in trust, does have some merit in it. And addressing that is where I typically begin the conversation. You don't establish trust in one visit or one encounter. You establish trust over time. So if I'm encountering somebody who has a different philosophy than I do about vaccinations, I try to build a bridge. And I know I can't build it in a day, but I never stop until I've tried every single time I can. But the key word is trust.
Thank you so much for that answer. And going back to before, where you're saying that globally, like the vaccine rates have like helped a lot. So are college students a unique population in any way when thinking about vaccines?
Yes. There's two dimensions about college students. One is we infer that most college students are relatively healthy. So that's a double-edged sword, because a lot of college students may not be vulnerable to severe manifestations of disease because they're healthy, but can be efficient spreaders of disease. So that's the one thing about college students. And the other dimension is to recognize that traditionally college students tend to live in closer groups than most other society. So those two combinations, those two things, the fact that you can be a minimally symptomatic spreader of disease and that a lot of people tend to be together in smaller spaces, makes college students a particularly important population to think about for vaccinations.
And so like, because of like the confined space, are vaccination levels typically higher or lower on college campuses?
They're typically lower. I think this is specifically with regards to the United States. They're typically lower. And I think it's true for all of us. Whenever we feel that we are healthy, our efforts to go seek care and get treatment tend to be lower. But that, of course, is a generalization. I think there are subpopulations that probably have higher vaccination rates. But I think the root of it is the assumption that health now equals health tomorrow. And me being healthy means that it doesn't impact somebody else. But both of those are not true. As a college student, you may be asymptomatically transmitting infections to other people. And your health today may not be the same as your health tomorrow.
Thank you. Going into a little bit the politics of vaccination, the United States witnessed great distrust in the polio vaccine and is now facing a similar sentiment surrounding the COVID-19 vaccine. Could you speak to any theories you have surrounding why public trust in vaccination is low during pandemics?
Yes, I think that the general ability to think rationally and clearly for all of us is diminished in crisis. I mean, think about each of you when you've had seconds to react to a very dramatic event. It's hard to think as crisply and as rationally as possible. A lot of us engage in protective behavior when there's a crisis outside, and sometimes that protective behavior is harmful to us. And so I think it's not too surprising that in a moment of crisis or in a year of crisis, that logic is not front and center. The truth is also that with how easy it is for us to talk right now, it's as easy for misinformation to spread. And that the combination of that fear taking over and how misinformation highways are prevalent, I think, are the two leading factors for the relative mistrust in the COVID vaccine.
Thank you so much for sharing that. So kind of just like changing the topic a little bit over here, but what are your thoughts on the optional COVID-19 vaccine policy that will be implemented across undergraduate UC campuses this upcoming fall?
Yeah, you know, I think that I'm always trying to see the other side of things, and I always assume good intention in people. At my level, it's hard to make an argument against them. If we have the supply and the resources to vaccinate everybody, why wouldn't we? And I don't have an answer to that. I cannot imagine a logical answer to saying, hey, I have a vaccine sitting here in the freezer and I won't use it. So I do think that it is true that there are populations that are more vulnerable to COVID-19 than the average college student. I think that's true. But I also worry that the other side of truth is that people who are young are not immune to severe disease or disease. And more importantly, people who are young are certainly potentially spreaders of disease. So I think for me, it comes down to what is the supply of the vaccine? Can we do anything about that and augment that? Because no one who has a scientific background and believes in science would argue that more vaccine for more people is better. So I think I would translate that question into, is it a supply issue? And can we work on that?
Thank you so much. Robbie, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. You did a really great job outlining the importance of herd immunity and vaccinations.
It's an absolute pleasure. You guys are doing a fantastic job, and I hope you will inform and educate many. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Chow and Dr. Jiha. We really appreciate your time for helping us facilitate strategies for having difficult conversations around vaccination and establishing the scientific ground that vaccines sit on. In closing, as a way to wrap up our conversation about vaccination, we want to discuss the results of a poll we ran with college students. We ran a survey with college students regarding their attitudes towards the COVID-19 vaccine. Our results showed that 74.8% and 21.5% of the respondents had either positive or mostly positive views regarding vaccination, respectively. Out of the total respondents, around 81.9% of the respondents stated that they would get the COVID-19 vaccine if it were offered to them today. Based on both the results of the survey as well as the current state of the world, conversations about vaccines are incredibly important and have the opportunity to be life-saving. Therefore, at the end of these 20 minutes, we all hope you learned about how to engage in meaningful conversations that will help usher in a new generation of constructive dialogue that allows individuals to make well-informed, non-shame-based medical decisions while realizing their role in the community.